We'll hear arguments first this morning in Tennessee Valley Authority against Hiram G. Hill. Mr. Attorney General.
I appeal on behalf of the government in this case. My colleague, Mr. Daniel Friedman, appears with me, as does Mr. Herbert S. Sanger, Jr., who is the general counsel of the TVA. In this unusual case, Mr. Attorney General, I agreed that the Secretary of the Interior could take a position opposite our position in this court, and I've included, I've stated his position in writing as an appendix to our brief. I understood that this is not violating the policy of the court, that historically, going back into the Eisenhower administration, on a rare occasion, this has been done. I'll, of course, not argue Secretary of Interior's position, but it's well stated, and I know what the court will take note of it. This case presents a conflict between the snail darter, an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act, and the Teleco Dam Project, which is a part of the TVA system. The Teleco Dam Project is just that, a project. It's a multi-purpose project designed to create a navigable body of water, electric power, industrial development, flood control, and recreation on the Little Tennessee River. The Little Tennessee River has its origins in the mountains of North Georgia, flows in a northwest direction generally, in the Knoxville, Tennessee area, finally into the Tennessee River. Many dams in the TVA system on the Tennessee River. There are 12 dams on the Little Tennessee River already. There's not a dam in the last 34 miles of the Little Tennessee before it reaches the Tennessee. So you've got 34 miles of open, free-flowing stream now. The dam in question, the Teleco, is located at the confluence of the Little Tennessee and the Tennessee. It will impound a body of water, rather large at the point of the dam, backing up the river for the 30 or 31 of the 34 miles to some extent. That dam itself will not generate electrical power. But this dam, Teleco, is very near the Fort Loudoun Dam on the Tennessee, and there's a canal connection of some 850 feet where this extra water will be impounded on the Tennessee. Little Tennessee will go over into the Fort Loudoun impoundment, and there will be used to generate electricity in the Fort Loudoun generating plant, and will generate enough electricity to supply roughly 20,000 homes.
General Bell, am I right in thinking that the Teleco Dam itself is on the Little Tennessee prior to its confluence with the Tennessee? Yeah.
Right, just before the confluence. Now, I think it will help if I give a brief chronology of the project. It was authorized by Congress in 1966. Construction began in 1967. 1972, there was a lawsuit commenced based on the fact that they had not filed an environmental statement. That litigation went on for about a year and a half. Went to the district court and Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals twice. Finally, TVA prevailed. They commenced working again on the dam and on the project.
That was before the discovery of the existence of the snail darter, was it?
Yes, sir. It was in 72 that began. August 73, the snail darter was discovered. The snail darter is of the darter of the perch family. There are 130 known varieties of darters. There are 85 to 90 in Tennessee alone. There are 11 in the Little Tennessee River. There have been 8 to 10 darters discovered in the last 5 years. It is known as a snail darter because it eats freshwater snail, which are found on the bottom of the Little Tennessee. I have in my hand a darter, snail darter. It was Exhibit 7 in the case when it was tried, and we brought that with us so that you could see it's a 3-inch. This is supposed to be a full-grown snail darter, about 3 inches in length.
Is it alive?
I've been wondering what it's in, if it is, if it's but it seems to move around. I've been puzzled over that.
Mr. Attorney General, your exhibit makes me wonder, does the government take the position that some endangered species are entitled to more protection than others?
Well, I don't take it this morning because I don't have to. I don't have to reach that
point.
Your
argument would apply to every endangered species, American eagle, no matter what it might be. Is that right?
I'd say that's what the Sixth Circuit held. I wouldn't say that.
The Endangered Species Act doesn't distinguish as among various priorities of endangered species, does it?
It looks to the list.
Yes.
Once it gets on the list, it is an endangered species, and in this case goes much further because it's the critical habitat is a thing.
And the snail darter is on the list. There's no.
It's on the list, and this particular area has been designated as a critical habitat.
Right.
Which means that under the holding of the court, we can't move the snail darter as we have. That wouldn't be enough. You have to save the habitat. So.
Well, General Bell, there is something in the briefs about efforts at transplantation, and I wondered, can you bring us up to date on that? Have they been successful? And secondly, I'd like to know whether the construction already done to the dam has so endangered the species that it's not going to survive anyway.
There has been a transplant been going on since 75, and best information I have is this is an unusual record. There are a lot of things that you can find out by looking in the petition to the secretary and those sort of things. It has been successful. There are some 700 transplanted, and there are about 2,000 there now. It's been going on 2 years. The argument is it takes 3 to 5 years to be sure that there's been a successful
transplant. Where were they transplanted?
They're transplanted from the Little Tennessee to the Hiawassee, and there they found a similar body of water stream and snake, freshwater snail for diet purposes.
You say this is in the it's not in the record of this case.
Some of it's in the not the success story. Yes. It's in public documents that were filed with the secretary when they tried to take the there's a petition filed to take the snail.
Of course,
everything
in those documents may not be true.
Exactly. I'm not asserting it as a truth. It's what I've been.
But TVA did ask for it to be taken off.
They did, and after a year, the secretary denied it just in the last 2 or 3 months, maybe in December. After this snail daughter was discovered, of course, TVA is an unusual agency. They only have authority to do whatever they can get money to do. It's they are authorized, self-authorizing, known in the government, and they have to get money every year, and there's been money appropriated for this dam every year through 77. And if there's a figure, small figure, in the 79 budget, FY 79 budget, to complete it. The dam itself is completed. All you have to do is shut the gate, close the gate. It's over with. It's just sitting there. If you'll notice in one of the amici briefs, Southeastern Legal Foundation, they've got some data they've developed, dredged out of the Secretary of Interior's records that the snail daughter's gone anyway, that once they built these sluice gates and beginning with the coffer dams, that the lava drift downstream and they're unable to get back. So it's not enough to just leave it, walk off. You'd have to do something to the dam. You'd take part of it out to restore the natural habitat. Well, in the chronology, there were various things said in the Congress, which I'll mention is in my argument. The issue presented is over the construction of the Endangered Species Act, Section 7 of the Act. The district court went about it on a balancing of equities, taking the position that It was not to be applied completely retroactively, that you ought to consider the stage of development of the project. The Sixth Circuit said because there was no other way to preserve the habitat, much less a daughter, that they had to give literal effect to the statute and enjoin the project, no matter what stage of completion. The statute itself is set out on page 2 of our brief, and the critical language is, number one, shall consult, but then says that the agency, that would be the TVA here, in carrying out programs, refers to taking such action, the agency must take such action necessary to ensure that actions authorized, this is a key language, funded, or carried out by them do not jeopardize the continued existence of such endangered species. Now, our argument is that by the way that the language of the statute itself can be construed to support the district court and allow this dam to be completed and operated. And then there are certain other things that I'll argue that support that. The district court used a hypothetical, which really draws the issue better than anything I've found in the whole case. The district court said if the plaintiff's argument were taken to its logical extreme, the act would require a court to halt impoundment of water behind a fully completed dam if an endangered species were discovered in the river on the day before the impoundment was scheduled to take place. And the district court said that would be too extreme. Second court said we disagree. That's what the act means. You'd have to shut down the dam the day before. We say that that's so extreme that it would prohibit an agency from maintaining a facility that was found to threaten the habitat of a newly discovered endangered species. We not only say that by way of argument, the Secretary has put it in his regulations, 50 CFR 402.03, just that Section 7 applies to all activities where federal control or involvement remains, which in itself could jeopardize an endangered species or critical habitat. So that's the issue that is presented. It's the issue that must be resolved. Can there be a balancing of the equitable factors in deciding whether this action taken in the meaning of the statute can be taken?
General, when you say balancing the equitable factors, is one of the ways that would be done the decision of the district court or the court of appeals whether an equitable injunction would issue?
That's it, yes. We think that the three key actions are modified, governed by the ways authorized, funded, or carried out. And if you give carried out the same meaning on a para materia basis as authorized or funded, it would read then that the agency had to have choices. What are the alternatives? Now, ordinarily, there are choices. Here, there were none. It's one or the other. It's just as if both courts saw it. The two cases where there were choices was the Sandhill Crane case in the Fifth Circuit, where the choice and the option and the alternative available to the Director of Transportation was simply to move an interchange and save the Sandhill Crane. That's the Wildlife Service versus Coleman. The other case was the Indiana Bat case, which was in the Eighth Circuit. And there I got into this thinking, what is the scheme of this statute? The Secretary admits in his regulations, and the Coleman case holds, as does this Eighth Circuit case, Sierra Club versus Froelke, that the Secretary of Interior does not have the veto power, but the act also allows a suit by a citizen. So the citizen can go in court and get the court to veto. That's what happened here. It just says you can't use this project. So I started looking, trying to find the scheme of the statute, because somebody's got to face this somewhere along the line. And it seems to me the 8th Circuit in Sierra Club versus Froakley had it right. That case, and they said that this impoundment behind this dam would fill caves with water and destroy the Indiana bat. There were some facts showing that there were a lot of bats in different other parts of the country. Not all the bats there in this area in Missouri would be destroyed. And the court said the way to approach this is first have in mind that the Secretary of Interior does not have a veto. All the duty on the acting agency is to consult. Consider all the alternatives. And then we test it, and that's reviewable in court. And we test it on an abuse of discretion. Was there an abuse of discretion? I think, in essence, that's what the district judge here did. He took all the factors. He said this dam is finished for all intents and purposes. They have moved these snail daughters, over to another place. We do not think that the statute was intended to be applied retroactively. At least there's a presumption that it shouldn't be applied retroactively. Taking all these things into consideration, I hold that the dam can be used and the project can go forward. In other words, he applied the Endangered Species Act.
What you're saying, I take it, is that the Endangered Species Act is not to be applied, was not intended by Congress to be applied to projects that were already underway.
Well, I think it does apply. No, I'm not saying it doesn't apply. It does apply, but then you consider what stage of development is the project in. What are the reasonable alternatives? Could you change it? Could you change the design?
Is one of the factors to be weighed the fact that $120 million has been spent at this point?
Exactly. That would be one, and the district judge weighed that. I think this kind of language is the strongest argument in favor of my position that I've been able to find is I found the Secretary's own regulation, which was in effect when the district court decided this case. This was what they call a tentative regulation. It's not a final regulation. But this is what it said. Neither the Federal Wildlife Service nor the National Fisheries Service, that's part of the Department of Interior, intends that Section 7 bring about the waste that can occur if an advanced project is halted. This is in a footnote on page 28 of our brief. The affected agency must decide whether the degree of completion and extent of public funding of particular projects justify an action that may be otherwise inconsistent. Now, that's when the Secretary had a chance to write a regulation before he'd ever found out about the 6th Circuit opinion. He didn't know they were going to hold as it did. His regulation has since been changed to recite the 6th Circuit opinion, the 6th Circuit ruling. But this was before we had any ruling. He thought this is what the statute meant. Now, that's one argument. The next argument, first is, you can read this language itself as allowing the district court result and as avoiding the harsh result of the Circuit Court. This second one is the Secretary's own regulation at that time. Third is that Congress three times, 75, 76, 77, said go forward with this project. We know about the snail daughter. This was in committee report, granted, not in the face of this statute. Go forward. We intend for you to complete this project. We don't have to argue that it was a pro tanto modification of the Endangered Species Statute. We say that that's persuasive of the construction that the district court.
So on any of the grounds that you're suggesting, you're suggesting that the statute itself be construed so that there's no violation here if these gates are closed.
That's it.
There's no violation of the statute at all.
No violation.
And although the statute applies, you construe the statute based on the various facts that are
balancing the factors. I would say it applies.
Your argument isn't that there's a violation of the statute, but an injunction isn't authorized.
That's it.
No, that isn't your argument, is it?
That is my argument.
You don't concede there's a violation of the statute, though.
Well, on a, no, I, mean, I don't.
You're saying
that
construe the statute so that closing the gates wouldn't violate the statute.
That would prevent there being a violation. The factors, if the facts taken as a whole, would prevent there being a violation of the statute. I don't concede. I say this. I concede the statute applies, though. I think
yes.
It does apply.
Yes.
Now, the last,
Lieutenant General, I understood your principal argument to be that the statute could not fairly be construed to apply to a project that was either completed or substantially completed.
Well, but that would be like a, find out if a court has jurisdiction, Bell v. Hood. You have to have a hearing to find out if you have jurisdiction. You'd have to have a hearing to see if the statute could be read as applying to these particular facts.
I understand you'd have to have a hearing, but if the fact were simply this, that the main dam in the Tennessee Valley is completed, nobody argues it isn't, is not completed, it's been 30 or 40 years.
Right.
Suppose they found the Snail Daughter down in that lake tomorrow. The Secretary of the Interior claims you must remove the dam.
That's exactly right.
Now, do you think the statute applies to that?
Well, I don't think the statute can be applied to that.
Do you think it could be construed reasonably to think that the Congress of the United States would require that that dam be removed?
I do not, but that would be a completed project. That's farther than our case.
My question was addressed to a completed project or one substantially completed, and you told us at the beginning of this argument that all that was necessary to be done was to close the gate.
Close the gate. Plus, that's a dam. Now, there are some roads to be completed. There's a little, there's $1.8 million in the 79 budget, but that's to complete some roads and bridges. The dam itself is finished. All the landscaping's been done, that sort of thing.
Yes.
So it is completed. But the, I have not argued that it's a sort of a thing, say, well, a road has been finished, and 5 years later they found something there, endangered species, and they say, would they remove the road? Here, a good example would be if they found a plant growing on a bank of this lake. Sometimes when they had the water down for during the wintertime, they'd lower the water 5 feet, and they find this plant, and they say, you never raise the water back up, because there's still action to be taken. So there was a little action left to be taken here.
A little bit.
A little, very little, but a little. I don't want to...
How much money has the government spent on this?
$110
million. $110
million. And
the government has appropriated $2 million to transplant these daughters.
I hadn't gotten to that. In the 1977 Appropriations Act, they actually appropriated $2 million to transplant the snail daughter. That was I view that as a consultation by Congress, not only by the agency. The Congress got into it and tried to resolve the problem.
Well, three times this project and the snail darter problem has been called to the attention of the Congress, has it not?
It has been every time they said go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be the last point that I would argue if I need to argue.
Did Congress ever grant an exemption from the Endangered Species Act for the snail darter?
They have not.
And they were very much aware of this problem, weren't they?
They're aware of it, and they've not...
Wouldn't that have been the most unambiguous way to resolve the whole thing?
That would be it, and that's my last point.
Much better than just hiding it in a committee report and appropriations.
Well, the last, in 77, they put it on the face of the statute, $2 million to move it.
$2 million. So they thought the snail darter was worth $2 million, but not $130 million.
I would say that would be a fair, that's a fair inference.
Well, General, it's easy to dump it on us, and we've never even seen a snail dog.
Yes, we have.
That one, you don't even know what he's alive
about. Don't, that's right.
Mr. Attorney General, can I ask one question about your argument about why the statute doesn't apply? Are you saying that the statute merely requires consultation? Or are you saying that completing the dam would not be an action within the meaning of the statute?
I'm saying that completing the dam would be. I'm saying it would be an action.
You're admitting it would be an action.
Right, because there's still some action to be taken. But it's the kind. But I'm saying that when you view what whether you're violating the statute, whether there ought to be an injunction. Now that's all a citizen is entitled to get is an injunction under this Endangered Species Act. You have to consider all the factors and before the chancellor acts. And I think the statute does not prevent considering all the factors. And one fact is that this dam is virtually completed. Another fact is that they have they have moved the snail daughter over to another place and in an effort to accommodate the snail daughter. Third is, the law is very clear that the Secretary of Interior does not have a veto. Has the TVA consulted in good faith and done all they can do under these circumstances?
Well, the statute requires more than just consultation in good faith. It does require consultation, but then it requires, in rather clear and unambiguous words, the agency to take such action necessary to ensure that actions authorized, funded, or carried out by it do not jeopardize the continued existence of the endangered species or the destruction or modification of its critical habitat.
Right.
Action necessary to ensure their actions do not jeopardize the continued existence. And as I understand it, it's conceded that the completion of this dam will jeopardize the continued existence of this endangered species or the modification of its critical habitat.
But we don't concede. We concede it will modify this critical habitat.
Which has been found to be the critical habitat, as I understand.
Well, unless this moving over to the Hiawassee River makes that into a non-critical habitat.
But the Secretary has determined this to be the critical habitat, has he not?
At the time.
Yes.
At the time.
And has determined this little fish to be an endangered species.
Right.
And the language of the statute that I've just read aloud for my own information and to refresh your memory seems to me to be an unambiguous requirement.
Well, that's what the Sixth Circuit said.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what the words say?
Not to me. I think you very often say, is a statute intended to be retroactive? There's a presumption against retroactive construction of a statute. This is certainly retroactive. It has been applied retroactively.
Mr. Attorney General, what would happen if you found some snail daughters in the basement of this building? We tear the building down. This building.
I don't know. You'd have to ask the Sixth Circuit that. I think they'd enjoin you from a functioning if they found it to be a critical habitat.
Has there been any proposal in Congress to amend Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act?
Yes, there has, to exclude this snail daughter.
Not to generally amend the language, but
not that I know of.
A specific exemption or exclusion of this.
Of the snail dog.
And what's the status of that bill?
It's pending in a committee and has not come out of a committee, as I understand.
Of course, that would still be possible, Mr. Attorney General. If we were to sustain the injunction, Congress could always exclude the snail darter later. But if we let the snail darter be extinguished, I guess the choice is irrevocable, isn't it?
Well, if you did that, but I don't know if anybody's trying to extinguish the snail daughter.
Well, the Secretary's found that he will be extinguished if the dam is closed.
The snail, but the Secretary has
you
never had a hearing.
You disagree on the facts, but don't we have to assume that's the fact for purposes of decision?
No. The record shows clearly that the snail daughter has been transplanted to the Hiawassee River.
Therefore, it is not the critical habitat. Is that right? I mean, what assumption do we make for purpose of deciding? Is the snail darter going to be extinguished or
we
not?
We can't find that. Only the Secretary of Law can find that.
And he has found it will be, hasn't he?
That's what he found at one time.
But don't we have to assume that when we decide the case?
Well, I don't think so. I think it does violence to the statute. It violates presumption against retroactivity to apply this finding to this completed project, virtually completed project. I think the statute means that you have to have some choices.
Mr. Attorney General, to what agency was that $2 million appropriated?
TVA.
And what's TVA supposed to do with it?
Carry on with their project to transplant the snail dog.
In other words, to see if they can do something which will not jeopardize the continued existence of the species.
Right, which they have been doing.
And if they fail?
Well, they haven't failed, but there's never been a hearing on that.
Well, I know. The fact that Congress said, here's $2 million, see if you can do something about preventing jeopardy to the continued existence of the species. Well, I would think that suggests that Congress intended if they can't, then they can't go on with the dam.
I'd say that Congress is trying to accommodate both problems.
Well, all we know is there's a one-line appropriation, I take it, is it?
That's it. And you know what's in the committee reports. Committee reports of three years have said go forward.
Well, I know, but
it hadn't been in the face of the statute.
The committee report the statute?
If it came to the president to veto, what would he veto, the committee report or the statute?
They'd veto the statute, and he couldn't
He could veto the appropriations, could he not, and stop the project any time since 1975?
Right. He has not done that. He's put it in it. Put it in the 1978 budget.
Mr. Attorney General, why shouldn't the court remand this case to have the record brought up today?
Well,
There are a lot of things happened since the Sixth Circuit, since the Court of Appeals decided.
That's exactly right.
And
you might well want to do that. See what I'm not objecting to it. I'm not advocating that. I think that the Sixth Circuit's in error.
Well, has anybody, is the Secretary's refusal to remove the fish from the list, he's done that in the last two or three months, you say? Or is it the habitat?
Well, it didn't have a hearing on it.
He refused, though, didn't he?
He refused.
Is that subject to judicial review?
I don't know.
If it is it, has review been sought?
I think you could have a review on the denial of due process to begin with, that you couldn't get a hearing.
Well, I know, but is the secretary...
But the case was pending up here.
Is that, do you just don't know whether it's the procedures to secure review of the secretary's refusal to remove the snail darter?
Well, I'm satisfied you can review it under the Administrative Procedure Act, but this is the key.
By a suit in the district court or by the probably, I guess?
I think you'd go to district court.
But that's not a change. That's just the maintenance of the status quo.
Well, it's a denial of a...
It's a refusal of the secretary to change the status quo.
Right.
That's not a change.
Right. I haven't even looked into that because the case was pending up here, and I thought we'd come up here with the case and see what happened before we get to worrying about the getting the secretary to change. The secretary at one time took the position that you had to wait 3 years to know if the transplant was successful. We're in the third year now, but it's not been 3 years.
Mr. Attorney General, may I ask you a friendly question? Let's assume that in order to resolve this issue, somebody introduced a bill in Congress saying explicitly that Section 7 shall apply to every completed federal project in the United States. Do you think many congressmen who voted for that clarification of this statute would be reelected?
No, well, they wouldn't vote for it to begin with.
Well, that's my point. And doesn't that suggest that no one, rationally could apply this to a completed project?
It does to me, and under the Sixth Circuit holding, it would have to be applied. And that regulation says it now.
May I ask you one other, maybe less friendly question? You commenced your argument, and I felt for you, by saying that it was not without precedent for two departments of the government to come to our court in an antagonistic position. It's not easy for us to resolve, I speak for myself, it's not easy for me to resolve issues of vast importance to our country when two cabinet-level departments are at sword's point. I wonder why these things aren't determined at the cabinet level rather than submitting them to us.
You say that's not so friendly. It's a very friendly question. It gives me an opportunity to say that I do not favor this system. We have one Attorney General and one Solicitor General, and I think that ought to be it.
Well,
but as long as you can do it, people will ask you to do it.
Perhaps you may have heard that when Mr. Justice Frankfurter was here, he thought that was just outrageous on behalf of the Solicitor General to come here and offer us conflicting views of two cabinet departments. And he said so with...
Well, I don't favor it myself.
Well, the trouble is that in some instances, Congress has expressly authorized it.
Well, they have.
Well, under the Interstate Commerce Commission can come
ICC
here and take...
But in this case, we
SEC
should speak with one voice. We speak with two because the court will permit it, is the argument made to me.
Mr. Justice,
that's the only time we've done it since I've been Attorney General. I don't favor it, but I'm glad I had a chance to say so.
Mr. Attorney General, did you have any obligation to present the views of the Secretary of... the Interior, or was that merely a matter of comity as one cabinet officer to another?
Well, it's more than that. It was a request.
Request by whom?
By the Secretary.
Well, but has it not been historically true that the United States government in this court and in all federal courts speaks through only one voice, namely through the Attorney General of the United States?
That's what it ought to be.
That's historically, that's been the case.
That is, and it's historically been the case with me, except in this one instance.
Well, but, Mr. Attorney General, are you suggesting that if the Secretary of the Interior has placed a species on the endangered species list, that the Attorney General should have the power to take it off the list?
No, no. I'm not suggesting that.
Well, no matter what we do, that part of the record is before us. The Secretary of the Interior has determined that this is an endangered species.
And we have to accept that this is a critical habitat.
This is a critical habitat. And that's his prerogative,
not mine.
We can't second-guess him on that, can we, any more than you can?
If you see his brief, he's not complaining about that. He thinks we're trying to change the substantive law by appropriation bill, and that we are contesting his regulations. That's his main point.
Mr. Attorney General, with regard to your statement a moment ago about other agencies of government taking in their own position here, contrary to what the Solicitor General might be, I indicated that Congress is expressly authorized in some instances, and I just suggest to you that this afternoon or tomorrow we're hearing a case in which the Federal Communications Commission is taking a position flatly contrary to the Department of Justice on a case. And so it's not a rarity.
And the State Commerce Commission does it.
Yes, exactly.
But those are by statute. This is not a statute.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. Mr. Plater.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. I am Zygmunt Plater for respondents. In this case, respondents quite simply support the unanimous decision of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals that the TVA must obey the law. Although the case arises from a conservation issue, it essentially turns on traditional questions of separation of powers and administrative law.
Mr. Plater, Judge McCree did write separately below, didn't he? Do you feel that he was, however, joining the majority opinion?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge McCree below said that he concurred with the result of the court's opinion, the fact also that indeed the TVA project must be enjoined because it would eliminate the species from the face of the earth.
Well, many times when we up here particularly concur in the result, it means we think the majority opinion is rather poor and we have reasons of our own.
Your Honor, I don't want to second guess Judge McCree, but it might be noted.
Well, you said that it was a unanimous opinion. It may be a unanimous judgment.
Unanimous position taken by the Sixth Circuit that this project should be enjoined. Thank you, Your Honor. The unanimous position then taken by the Sixth Circuit and the position taken by the Department of Interior and by respondents comes down essentially to two basic points. The first point is that Congress in 1973, when this species was discovered, wrote a mandatory statute to the agencies that it itself, Congress, had created, prohibiting those agencies from taking actions which would jeopardize or destroy endangered species. And that section is clearly violated by the dam portion of the Tellico project. And secondly, Congress has not changed the law. Although Congress is reviewing public interest resolutions for the conflict, Congress hasn't changed the law, and this Court should not amend the law. And yet that is precisely what TVA's position is asking the Court to do, to construct some form of implied, informal grandfather clause exemption for this project back in 1973, as well as at the present, and construct some sort of informal statutory amendment overriding the Endangered Species Act based on appropriations funding.
Suppose you found snake daughters around Chickamauga Dam on the TVA. What would you do?
Your Honor, that is a question also like the question asked by Mr. Justice Powell. Yeah. And the point is, the biologists tell us that if you could find the species in a completed project, that would be a biological indication that that population was not endangered by the dam because, indeed, it was living there, established there, breeding. And then, of course, no completed dam would have to be taken down.
But suppose the Department of the Interior said it was.
Your Honor, the Department of Interior...
You'd have to tear Chickamauga down.
No, Your Honor. All they have is biological authority to assert that the endangered species is there and is threatened by the present circumstances.
Well, suppose they say that.
Well, Your Honor...
And they're wrong.
If they were wrong, then this answers the question posed also by Mr. Justice White. There are proceedings currently underway in district court in Tennessee challenging another listing of an endangered species, arguing that the Department of Interior is wrong. That's the way to do it. The biological opinion of the secretary, once established, is established and is not to be overturned by lawyers trying to debate biology.
But you concede there is judicial review of the Secretary of the Interior's action.
Yes, Your Honor.
Either in putting a species on the endangered list or in saying that in certain areas it's critical habitat.
The current pending action seeks a delisting of a species that
but
has already been
judicial
listed.
Review of either finding?
There appears to be, and respondents have no legal
under the
argument.
Administrative Procedure Act, or
I'm not sure what the basis of the claim there is, Your Honor. I only know that the case is pending.
Let me pursue a question that Mr. Justice Marshall put to you. Suppose you have a $300 or $400 million dam. I don't know the value of the cost of the one he mentioned, and you are confronted with a showing that. Originally, there were 300,000 of a particular species. And now, by the operation of the dam over a period of years, it's down to 10,000, and it's about to become extinct. Are you suggesting that Congress intended that that dam should be torn down?
Your Honor, that, of course, is not this case.
Well,
and
no, we're asking you hypothetical questions to test your arguments.
Well, that's a good point.
Attorney General.
Your Honor, the question is whether there is a remaining prospective federal action which will jeopardize a species. It's clear under the Act that the agency does have a statutory duty to take measures to try to conserve the existence of the darter. But the question of whether, in a situation where there are no federal actions remaining, nevertheless,
the
agency
federal action is the continuance of the dam.
In that situation, Your Honor, that certainly is a question that would have to be raised. We do not take a position on that argument, but the point is Congress appears to have cared very clearly about preventing the extinction of species. There were two prior statutes in 1966 and 1969 which gave agencies discretion, and the courts reviewing them, to balance the question, and those statutes did not work, so that Section 7 was written in 1973 as mandatory. Your Honor's question is one that is certainly difficult to handle. I think that the easiest way to handle that is perhaps to take the hypothetical that General Bell ably brought out, and that is this. There may be cases where the public interest is so intimately involved with a case and a species would be jeopardized that indeed there must be a hard decision taken and the species rendered extinct. Now, that's never had to occur. There has never in human history been a conscious extinction of a species, but we say that indeed that may be the case. The point is, however,
do we know the facts right now? Do we know how many snail darters are there?
We know approximately, Your Honor, and this is.
Well, how many have been removed?
In the present case, Your Honor, we do not have a full record on the transplantation, but these are the facts as best
that?
We know them.
We need that? Suppose where they're now living, they're 6 and 8 inches long and just have a ball. Would your argument be the same?
Your Honor.
Would your argument be the same?
No, Your Honor, it would not be if the Secretary of Interior changed.
You wouldn't
changed.
Have any argument, would you?
Your Honor,
well,
if.
Shouldn't we find that out?
Your Honor, if the Secretary of Interior changes the listing of the species in the critical habitat, then clearly this case is no
that
longer.
That was not my question.
Excuse me, I misunderstood.
My question was, shouldn't we know what the transplanted snail darters, how they're faring? Shouldn't we know that before we decide this case?
Your Honor, the situation
I'm not
up
talking
to
about
date,
the Secretary of the Interior, I'm talking about us.
All right. Your Honor, the factual situation presented in our brief is up to date as well as is known by anyone. And that is this situation. TVA claims that approximately 2,000 fish now exist in the Hiwassee. But as they revealed in the Senate hearings and noted at footnote 26
well,
in our
how
brief.
How can we accept it when you're now getting ready to say that what they say is not true?
Your Honor, that is based on arithmetic.
How do we know what's true?
Because
we're not a fact-finding body.
Your Honor, that's correct. The TVA's biological data perhaps is determinative here. In December of last year, they did transects in the Hiwassee River, and they revealed out of 710 fish that were put in, 5 fish left in the transects on the original shoals, and I believe it was 9 juveniles near the flowage of the Ocoee River. That is the latest scientific evidence on how many fish are in the Hiawassee. TVA therefore concluded that the transplant is working latest, well, but dispersed.
If I may correct you, that's the latest scientific evidence you know about.
Your Honor, I have checked the records of the Secretary of Interior,
well,
who is
I mean,
in communication with...
Well, suppose there's some other records available. Do you seriously object to this going back?
Your Honor, there may be reasons for this case to be remanded. However, transplantation is not a fulfillment of the Act, and therefore, that would be an incidental inquiry. We believe that
do you
in this...
Mean, do you mean that even if a successful transplant took place, you'd still be opposing the functioning of this dam?
Not at all, Your Honor, but we would request that the legal procedures be followed. If the transplantation were a success so that the species were no longer endangered, the Secretary of Interior, petitioned by TVA, would review the biological data for this court and for Congress, would certify that it's no longer endangered, would take it off the list, and that would be the end of the
question. Or else he could simply say that this is no longer its critical habitat.
Your Honor, under the Act, I believe that both of the elements are separate violations. That is to say, it is illegal
right.
for an agency either to render a species extinct
or to
destroy
or to modify
critical
its
habitat.
Critical habitat. But
yes.
if this could continue to be an endangered species, but if the area to be flooded by the dam is no longer its critical habitat, there would be no violation of the statute.
Unless the Secretary...
If the fish thrive in the Hiawassee River.
Your Honor, if the fish thrives in the Hiawassee River,
Hiawassee.
Then indeed... As Mr. Chief Justice Berger suggested, through this procedure, this case would come to an end. But that does not appear to be the biological evidence. As a matter of fact, it appears that the best place for a species to live is in its only known natural habitat. I would indicate to the court
Well, that's not historically true.
Well,
for every species, there have been all sorts of species imported into new areas where they do much better than they ever did in their original home.
Isn't that
that's
the history
true.
Of evolution?
Your Honor, however... Apparently, the Hiawassee River is connected geographically to the Little Tennessee, and biologists tell us that if the Hiawassee were a good habitat for the species, it would be there by the process of evolution. But that rather, this species turns out to be a highly sensitive indicator of precisely the qualities of the habitat that the citizens were fighting about in this case for years before the snail darter was known to exist. Yes?
Apart from the biological interest, which I certainly do not challenge, what purpose is served, if any, by these little darters? Are they used for food?
No, Your Honor.
For fertilizer?
When Congress passed the law, it made it clear that the purpose of the Act was to prohibit the extinction of species for a variety of reasons. One of them is where there was a food value and a direct economic value. Others for scientific study and the philosophical question that indeed a species should not be eliminated. Biological diversity, but ultimately, there's a utilitarian purpose which is served precisely by the snail darter. That is to say, even though it doesn't have food value, as I was indicating, it is highly sensitive to clean, clear, cool, flowing river waters. And after 68 dams through the TVA river system, 68 of them, one after another, the range of the snail darter has apparently been destroyed one by one until this last 33 river miles is the last place on Earth where the species and human beings as well have the qualities of the habitat.
The last place that's been discovered, I take it.
Your Honor, TVA has looked everywhere for snail darters. They've searched. It appears that this river system...
They haven't checked the basement of our building yet.
Your Honor... If snail darters were in the base of this building, then I suspect they would not be endangered. They would have found them, Your Honor, and there would be a bounty on the snail darter's head.
Mr. Plato?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are they suitable for bait?
Your Honor,
I'm a bass fisherman.
Your Honor, the Little Tennessee River has a fine bass population in its lower stretches, both smallmouth and largemouth, but they don't appear to be interested in the snail darter, which is perhaps why the snail darter has survived also.
They're indigestible.
Yeah. Pardon? Your Honor, the snail darter holds over very shallow shoals. It's a highly specialized fish, as I was indicating, an indicator of water quality. Instead of a dead one, I've left with the clerk several prints, which were Exhibit 12, at trial, which show the species in its natural habitat along the bottom of the water, and this would be eliminated. There are now 2,500 miles of dammed up river in the Tennessee area. more than twice the coastline of all the Great Lakes combined. And this is the last such stretch of river which is left. The Hiwassee transplant, in the evidence that Justice Marshall was discussing, does not currently appear to be successful. And this Little Tennessee River appears to be the only place where the fish would live.
Mr. Plater, isn't at least an arguable in part of the intent of Congress that the government simply leaves certain areas of nature alone without necessarily having a reason for leaving them alone, but just that they didn't want any more elimination of species and so forth?
The Devil's Hole pupfish case, which this court decided was such a case, where there was one small area which was made into a reserve, this court unanimously upheld that reservation.
We weren't faced with the conflict between the pupfish and a $122 million dam, though.
Your Honor, that isn't the conflict in this case either. The $120 million, which Your Honor refers to, is the total project cost. But the project is not primarily the dam. As a matter of fact, the dam structure cost $5 million, a large part of which was labor, plus earthworks. It is talked about as a dam because that was certainly the focus for TVA's planning. The $120 million, Your Honor, is for the purchase of 38,000 acres of land, less than half of which was to be flooded. That was condemned for resale at a profit to pay off the costs of the project. 25,000 acres of those are prime agricultural lands. And to say that that would be lost by destroying this darter, not to consider the fact that the project includes land purchase, roads and bridges, which are immensely beneficial for the people, and to focus on the dam itself, which Congress itself is now reassessing completely, is to lose sight of the realities of the situation. The conflict in this case is between an agency which has since 1973, when there was only a little bit of that concrete there, out of $120 million to be spent. In 1973, they took the position that they would not comply with the Endangered Species Act, and as we noted on page 13 of our brief, trebled the rate of expenditure, doubled the amount of money spent. That is to say, the conflict in this case is between an agency which did not want to consider anything but the original dam as proposed.
Mr. Plater, what did you mean when you suggested Congress is now reconsidering what?
Yes, Your Honor. Once the injunction came down, the Sixth Circuit said the law will be enforced. That is the role of the courts. And the biological violation has clearly been shown. There were immediately a series of actions taken in the proper committees with jurisdiction over the act. That is to say, the House Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee and the Senate Public Works and Environment Committee. They requested a GAO study to review the cost evaluation of the dam project, and they found that it was highly unreliable. And second, to look at what alternatives there were, even today, for resolving this issue. Mr. Justice Powell talked about it as a dam which is fully completed and no other alternatives. That is the way the petitioner would characterize it, but Congress is not doing so. The GAO study indicated that there are a series of project modifications which were suggested to TVA as early as 1974, which they have rejected again and again, which still today appear to be even more profitable than the dam. Farming, for instance, is the first industry of Tennessee, and it would be destroyed in this valley area. Tourism is the second, and I note in Appendix B, this dam project is up against the Smoky Mountains.
You couldn't call roads endangered species, could you?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
Well, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about closing down roads.
Your Honor, the Congress is weighing, on one hand, the original dam project, which includes valuable investment in roads, bridges in the valley, and the purchase of lands.
Was Congress considering what was going to be done about this particular matter, including snail darters?
Precisely.
Like this one here.
Precisely.
Not roads.
That's exactly right.
Are you suggesting, Mr. Plater, that Congress may finally decide we'd better abandon the whole dam? At least the
Yes,
dam.
Your Honor. The dam has always been only a small portion of the project. The project was passed not for hydropower purposes. Electrical power, barge, those were all minor. It was passed to create industrially subsidized lots and more recreation in an area where you've already got 22 recreational lakes within 60 miles. Congress, indeed, is saying that although we have lost not 120 million, but something far less than half of that, the value of the remainder may be several times greater than the purported claims for the dam. That is to say, Congress is reviewing it, and, Your Honor, I am pleased to announce that the agencies are reviewing it as well. In the reply brief of TVA, it is noted that the new director of TVA has agreed the dam is not integral to this project. The project has benefits which can be achieved as well or better, which without the destruction of the valley by a reservoir. And secondly, I was informed just today, Your Honors, that the Secretary of Interior has requested TVA, and TVA has agreed to consult.
Just speak for myself. I'm not interested in what you discovered today. I got a record here.
Your Honor, our case is fully sufficient on the record. It shows that there's a violation. It shows that Congress in the lawmaking committees is considering exactly the question Your Honor suggested.
The record also show that this dam was not for hydraulic purposes.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. It was.
Well, why don't you say that's what you were told today, because that's in the record.
Your Honor, it is clear in the record that this project was being made for general regional economic development. It's the last dam in Tennessee Valley Authority's building history. It's the most marginal. It's the last one on a list of 1933 dams.
Mr. Plotter, let me just interrupt you with one question, too. There's been an awful lot of discussion about things that have happened since the district court tried this case. Is any of that relevant to our decision? Anything the Attorney General said or anything you've been telling us in response to all these questions? We have a finding of fact that this closing the dam would result in total destruction of the snail darter's habitat. Do we have to know anything else?
No, Your Honor. I agree completely with Your Honor's question.
Well, let me put another question to you that I think is in addition to that. You haven't discussed it yet, and you don't have much time left. Do you suggest that any of the legislation passed here has abrogated the normal equity function of a United States district judge in granting an injunction, the very extraordinary relief that's sought here?
Not at all, Your Honor.
Are you suggesting that he should not function as he does with any other application for an injunction?
Your Honor, that question is an important one. We do not advocate the stripping of this court or any court of the equitable powers. And indeed, Your Honor, we rely on Your Honor's decision in Rondeau versus Mosinee Paper Corporation. And that is to say, the equity courts have the full panoply of powers required to enforce the law of Congress.
But Hecht against Bowles says you don't get an injunction automatically for a statutory violation.
That's correct, Your Honor, and we do not insist on an injunction. If petitioner agreed to obey the law voluntarily, as the Hecht Corporation did in that case, or as the Mosinee Paper Company agreed in Your Honor's case.
Well, then you don't need an injunction.
That's
so
precisely
that's
right, and the law will be complied with.
But the question that I'm putting to you is, should not the district court, confronted with an application to enjoin the operation of a dam in which $122 million worth of money, one way or the other, has been invested, exercise
110, Your Honor.
110? All right. $110 million has been invested. Exercise the ordinary functions of an equity judge, weighing and balancing the equities.
Yes, Your Honor, it seems to me that the court does have equitable discretion. And let me describe, however.
And that includes the equitable discretion not to enforce a statute.
No, Your Honor, it does not.
You think it does not?
Let me take the far-out hypothetical.
Sure, it does.
Taking the Tellico Dam today and advancing it to the point of completion, that is to say, they would still have to cut down trees, bulldoze, scrape, and strip the valley. They would have to construct the canal. They would have to get the gates ready for closing. At that point, if, for instance, Your Honor, it were discovered that the whooping crane required that valley to breed, and that if the valley were closed, the breeding would be eliminated. Breeding is considered important for the continuation of a species, and the district court could not, it seems to us in that case, Your Honor, take on the question, which is essentially a very legislative question, of what should be done with the Tellico Dam. For instance, the court would then have to go into the full cost accounting, Your Honor, it would have to consider, now, what is the true value of this dam as originally made?
I don't agree with you, Mr. Plotter, because you have a long history of equitable adjudication where, for instance, a building is built over a lot line. And there's been a contest throughout, but the chancellor doesn't reach a decision until the building is finally built. And he may say, applying the common law, which is has the same sanction to him as the legislative law passed by Congress does. I will give you damages. I will not give you an injunction. Now, why isn't this an appropriate case for that sort of a
denunciation? Several reasons. Number one, as Your Honor noted, damages, of course, is not a remedy. Once a species is rendered extinct, as Congress said, it's extinct forever. Secondly, of course, that would be involving private parties under the common law. This Court has repeatedly said that in cases which involve a congressional statute, that indeed the principle which guides the Court in the exercise of its discretion is enforcing the law, which has not been set up by common law, but by statute.
In Hecht against Bowles.
No, Your Honor, we are not arguing that an injunction must be issued. Under the Hecht case...
That is, if there were voluntary compliance, an injunction
And that was precisely
necessary.
It in the Hecht, Hecht case. Yes, Your Honor. The Hecht case said if compliance with the congressional statute would otherwise be achieved, the Court, of course, need not issue an injunction. We would be pleased if an injunction would not have been necessary in this case, because in 1973, when all options were fully open, although Congress appears to indicate that, and the GAO study indicates that options still are open today, we would be much better in a much better position to review the question. Yes, Your Honor.
May I come back to the argument you were making a few minutes ago that this dam, after all, is not important to what Congress intended? I read a few words from the Senate Appropriations Committee report last year. The project will provide needed flood control, water supply, recreational opportunities, improved navigation. Now, without the dam and the water in it, will any of those objectives of Congress be attainable?
Your Honor, it should be noted that the Appropriations Committee at no time has ever reviewed the GAO study, the reviews taking place in the other committees, and so on. It turns out...
That wasn't my question.
Your Honor, it is true that there would be no flood control, there would be no electric power in the project.
No recreation?
No, that is not so, Your Honor. The river is the last place left in the river system that has high-quality water conditions. It's the finest trout stream in the southeast of the United States. People come from Alabama, Georgia, and all over to fish because...
You've got Justice Stewart's vote already.
Yes. Your Honor, it is the last place for flowing water recreation. And as the GAO noted, because there have been so many impoundments...
Do you think the Senate of the United States or the Senate Appropriations Committee was thinking about maintaining the stream when it was appropriating money to close the dam?
Your Honor, I believe that the relevant discussion is in the committee that has lawmaking jurisdiction over the Act, and they clearly are concerned about recreation, and the House side as well.
Is there any record that the members of that committee have voted against this appropriation?
Your Honor, the appropriations bill on its face does not purport to treat Teleco. It says nothing about Teleco.
I understand the bill on its face doesn't, but do you think any rational person could read the reports of the committees for the last 4 or 5 years and conclude that there was any intention on the part of the Congress other than to complete this project?
Your Honor, I believe that one reading those reports would find clearly and specifically that indeed Congress had no intent to amend the Act. And that is one of the requirements for taking an appropriations bill or an appropriations committee report and reading out of it an informal implied amendment. There must be some indication of an intent to amend. And as a matter of fact, in 1977, Your Honor, Senator Stennis specifically said, if we put such an amendment in here, it would be subject to a point of order. I think Your Honor's question, however, reflects the fact that certainly the appropriations committee or certain members of it probably didn't agree with the Endangered Species Act, or wished that it didn't apply in this case, but there was no intention expressed to amend, and that is the only basis upon which we could use that to change the law.
Do you think that reflects any indication on the part of the Congress not to construe Section 7 as applying to completed projects?
I believe, Your Honor, that the appropriations bill, as every appropriations bill is passed, presumes that the agency will comply with all applicable relevant law. The agencies are creatures of Congress.
You apparently didn't hear my question, so I'll put another one to you.
Thank you.
Is it still your position, as I understand it, that this Act, Section 7, applies to completed projects? I know you say you don't think it'll occur very often, that there'll be a need to apply it, but does it apply if the need exists?
To the continuation of...
To completed projects. Take the Grand Coulee Dam.
Right. Your Honor, if there were a species there,
I'm not asking
it wouldn't
you
be endangered by the dam.
I know. That's your view. I'm asking you
If
not to project,
I see, Your Honor.
Not to project your imagination into the future beyond accepting my assumption, and that is that an endangered species might turn up at Grand Coulee. Does Section 7 apply to you?
I believe it would, Your Honor. The Secretary of Interior would.
That's my question.
Yes, it would. The consequences of that, of course.
But in what respect, Mr. Plotter, would it apply? It would apply only to future action, wouldn't it?
Well, Your Honor, as we litigated this case,
it doesn't ever require anybody to tear anything down, does it?
No matter how it certainly says nothing about that in the Act, Your Honor.
It says you cannot conduct certain actions in the future if they're going to extinguish a species. That's what it says.
But actions might be the continued operation of a dam.
Or raising and lowering of the water, which is done on cyclical levels.
But there's nothing that would require you to tear a dam down.
If that situation would arise, Your Honor, it would probably be a biological rarity in the sense that if the species comes when the water goes up and down, then it is established there and it's not endangered. Maybe the way to answer this is on the basis of the administrative record, because in the hearings last summer, the Culver hearings in the Senate, it was again and again noted that the biological expertise of the Department of Interior is capable of handling many sophisticated such questions, and there has never been a case that could not be resolved through good faith administrative consultation. There have been 4,500 potential conflicts. There have been hundreds of actual conflicts, but only TVA testified that the Act was unworkable. Every other administrative agency said that, although the Act sometimes was a bother, that they could resolve these conflicts.
But why don't you rely on the fact that even though a facility is all built, if you knew about it when you started building, isn't that what you say?
That was the situation in this case, Your
That's
Honor.
That's what I mean.
In 1973, TVA knew. No, of course not, Your Honor. Thank
well,
you for reminding me.
When this litigation first began to block the development of the project, there was no snail darter problem involved, was there?
The NEPA suit, Your Honor, which was filed in 1971, noted that there possibly were endangered species in the river. TVA had noticed, but at that time, of course, Your Honor, it was the old Act which allowed TVA to have the discretionary flexibility that now they're trying to read into this Act applied.
Then the snail darter was discovered and became a handy handle to
Your Honor,
to.
There. The question of the snail darter clearly went specifically to the qualities of this habitat that, as you suggest, the citizens had been concerned about for years. That is to say, the last free-flowing, clear such big river left in the region.
Well, in short, they just don't want this project.
Your Honor,
for a combination of
there are a combination of plaintiffs in this case, many with different points of view. As I note, the snail darter is integral to the environmental conservation balance question, which has been litigated over the years. But one of our plaintiffs, for instance, is the Association of Southeastern Biologists, has no interests in the valley for conservation purposes, but for biological purposes is taking what I believe is its first public stand to show that a biological statute of Congress is important to be enforced, that agencies should not violate the law with impunity. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, that's where we would leave the case. The Act is working on the record, except in this case. This is the only agency that has persistently declined to comply with the law. And, of course, in 1973, there were all options open. That is the relevant time to question when, indeed, TVA should have looked at this Act and decided that it, like every other federal agency, would abide by the law.
Well, Mr. Plotter, I understand that you what your position is and what the law means, but if somebody happened to disagree with you as to how to construe the Act, it might be that the agency isn't violating the law at all.
Your
the
Honor,
argument it is what the law means.
Only TVA is making that argument.
Well,
in 19...
nevertheless, your statement is absolutely incorrect if the Act is not unless the Act is construed the way you say it should be construed.
Yes, Your Honor, if this Act is discretionary, the way the old law was written. If this Act doesn't mean what it says, then indeed this lawsuit
was misfunded. One of the issues in the case is what does the Act mean?
The regulations of the Department of Interior. Every holding in the case so far, and
well, now
every
you're
other
arguing,
agency.
I understand. You're arguing that it should be construed in a certain way.
Yes, Your Honor, I
But
am.
Some other people disagree with you.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.